Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Yes, it's 3GT time. And this is Barry York, president of RPTS. And I am recording this episode in the cozy confines of my garden house. And I am joined today by my good friends and fellow co-hosts, Kyle Borg out in Manhattan, Kansas.
Manhattan, Kansas.
Oh, wow.
Kansas.
Winchester, Kansas. I'm thinking of my dear daughter. That's why, where my heart really is when I think of Kansas.
Oh, I thought I maybe made you think of your daughter. So
No, hardly so. But Kyle, you're sporting a nice winter beard there and your farmer's hats, and you're in your study there. And then Scott Hunt joins us from, make sure I get this right, Marion, Indiana. And he's got on his dapper pink sweater that he's pulling off well today. And it's been a tough day.
Pink sweater with a blue, the other guy has a pink sweater and a blue shirt. It's very baby colors.
Very peaceful. I think it's been a rough week for him. So I think he's just trying to, you know, dress in a color, soothing colors. Is that right, Scott?
Sure. It could also be it's cold and I wanted to wear a sweater. So I found this one. I mean, it could be that too. I don't know.
But it's not a cardigan.
Colors. They bring you back to your baby days.
It is not a cardigan. It's a pullover, but thank you for noticing.
Yeah. I can barely see.
That's Kyle, did you catch that? It kind of got turned around a little bit, but did you catch that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. There was a cultural reference there, Barry, that I think went over your head.
It did, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's all right.
Someday we ought to do an episode on cultural contextualization, and we can just sit at Barry's feet and learn all about it.
Yes. Well, we are glad that you've joined us. And today what we want to talk about, our topic at hand, is really shepherding the flock of God's people. As you look at the scriptures, one of the leading metaphors used to describe the people of God is that just that, a flock of God's people. It's an Old Testament metaphor that's brought over into the New Testament and used extensively by the apostles and Christ himself. And so we want to think about what that means to shepherd God's people. Guys, when I was entering into my role as professor of pastoral theology, I really spent a lot of time reading some of the pastoral theology works of the ages, and that is one thing I really noticed going down through the ages is just this whole idea, if we're going to care for God's people, we really have to think of them in flock-like terms, and guys like Martin Bucer and Concerning the True Care of the Soul or Proper Flock Service or something like that, he says. Down to more modern books like Timothy Whitmer's Shepherding God's Flock. Or no, that's Adams. The Shepherd Leader is Whitmer's book. But anyway, that metaphor runs strong in the scriptures. And so I thought we would have a discussion about that today. And part of what prompted me as we were trying to schedule our recording time today, Scott, you mentioned that you have a session meeting that you'll be leaving to go to this evening. Mm-hmm. And so I thought maybe we'd just really start there. We all three regularly meet in session meetings. And so I thought we might just begin by talking about that. What is a session meeting? Why do we call it a session meeting? What do we do at session meetings? How are yours conducted? What are the goals? So open the lid into your secret session meetings and let the people of God peer in here for a minute and tell us what goes on in Winchester and in Marion when you guys have session meetings.
The first thing I'm going to say is we don't have secret session meetings. We have open session meetings, and the congregation is invited to come and to observe what's going on. Uh-huh. I'm not a big fan of closed secret type meetings, but I'll let Kyle you know, tell about what happens in Kansas first, and then I'll, you know, let you in on Marion.
Well, a session meeting is the name that we give when the elders of the congregation come together for our official meeting. In the Reformed Presbyterian Church, we understand that when we come together in that way, we are seated as a court of Christ's church. We speak in terms of court within Presbyterianism because it really emphasizes our understanding of what we would call the ministerial authority or the ministerial ministry of the leadership of the church. You know, when you think about American civics, you think about the different branches of government. You have the executive and the legislative and the judicial. And, you know, a common phrase that you hear from people in our own society is how frustrating it is when the judicial branch begins to legislate from the bench. And we mean by that, it's, you know, the role of a judge is not to legislate. It's not to create laws. The role of a judge is simply to declare what is law and what is unlawful. And Presbyterianism uses that type of vocabulary, that type of language to understand the ministry of the elders. We're not legislatures. There is one lawgiver, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. As elders in the church, we really only sit in judgment. We seek to judge the word of God. And in judging the word of God and rightly dividing it and understanding it, then applying that word to the different circumstances, situations, and decisions that need to be made. So that's real briefly, you know, when we sit in session, when we sit as a session, we are sitting as a court of the church. And in fact, in the Reformed Presbyterian Church, every single meeting that we have usually very explicitly begins in that way. And so we always open our meetings, and I actually think it's required in our Directory for Church Government.
Yes.
We open our meetings asking that we would be established as a court in the house of the Lord in the name and by the authority of Jesus Christ, who is the King and the head of the church. And at least in our meetings, that is always specifically prayed, verbatim, really, or a paraphrase or something very similar. And so when the elders come together, that's kind of the first thing to think about is we are doing the work of, for lack of a better expression, the judicial branch. We are seeking to understand the scriptures relative to the worship, the life, the decisions that need to be made within the church. So that's where I'd begin. Barry, you had asked why are we kind of called a session? I'll let Scott start filling in some of the details of the secret society, of the court there in Marion.
Yeah. Well, and just to affirm what you said before Scott pipes in, we do have an opening prayer. We often talk about constituting the court. So we're by doing that, we're saying we're wanting to act under the authority of Christ, and the decisions that are rendered here really become the official acts of the congregation, if it's at the congregational level. And then we adjourn at the end, and we end the time that we're seated in court. So thank you for that description, Kyle. Scott?
And maybe, actually, so I'm sorry, real quick, just to make sure our vocabulary is right. Within Presbyterianism, as we've been saying, this is a session meeting. And session is really just, it's a word from the Latin, which means to sit. And so that's, you know, we are seated together. You think of the imagery of the Psalms that in the house of the Lord, the thrones of David are set for judgment. So that's when we speak of session, that's why we're speaking in those terms. It's from the Latin to sit. We are sitting in judgment.
Scott?
I'm just waiting.
No, go ahead. I won't interrupt you, other guy.
Well, you've done it twice now, so I'm just waiting.
I'll mute him if he does it again.
It's a brilliant trick you can use. So when we sit in session, a lot of people think of sitting, you know, courts of the church, passing judgment. It's like we're sitting behind some table and condemning and doing that to the shepherds. And that's not what we're doing when we're in constituted court. And that's what I think of when I think of court. I think of a judge who's ready to pass judgment, to pass sentence, call into question everything that's done. And we do is shepherd the flock in the session meeting. And almost everything we do And I want to thank my pastor, Kyle. Kyle's not my pastor. I wish. Sure. Aaron Murray, who's got a great podcast, I'll plug that here, for pointing this out. But, you know, everything we do, from the budget to the different committees that we have, to the even the business type discussions, how the building's going to be worked, we do that with the flock, the congregation in mind. Is how are we leading this congregation to use the funds that the Lord has given us? How are we using the facilities that the Lord has given us properly to encourage the congregation? So, you know, when you think of shepherding the flock, it's not just about talking about each individual member and praying for them, though that is certainly a part of it. But everything we do, we have an eye toward caring for the sheep that the Lord has given us and placed us over. So it's a great responsibility. It's enjoyable. It's a blessing. It's hard sometimes. But so that's what we do. And at least in most session meetings I've been in, is shepherd the flock by trying to care for and lead them in the ways of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Is that all right, Kyle?
Yeah, that's great. That's great, Scott.
What are some of the other...
I'm glad to hear of everything that Aaron Murray teaches you. So
yes, well...
What are some of the other goals would you say? Like, how do
I'll
you
never live that down, will I?
No. I think together with what's... So maybe some of the practical ways in the nitty-gritty details of a session meeting, you know, one of the things that we emphasize in the RPCNA is the role of prayer in these meetings. And so, for example, if you go back to Acts chapter 6, which some people take as the establishment of the deacons, or at least something very similar to the office of deacon, you know, one of the concerns in Acts 6 in the daily distribution was that the apostles were being drawn away from the ministry of the word and prayer, and that in order that they could devote themselves to that, either the deacons are established or something similar to the deacons to kind of take care of that daily distribution. And Luke makes very specific that as those men are set apart for that, the apostles say, you know, you go ahead and wait tables so that we can devote ourselves now to the ministry of prayer and the word. And they actually do it in that priority. It's the ministry of prayer and the ministry of the word. So a really significant part of a session meeting, and at least the way we practice it in Winchester ordinarily, last night we had a session meeting and it went a bit later than we normally go, and so we'd not spend as much time in prayer. But a good portion is devoted to prayer. It's devoted to, you know, in Winchester, we walk through what members have we had contact with, who have we been visiting, what are known issues, known concerns, you know, who needs to be encouraged, who might need to be admonished a little bit, you know, who needs to be strengthened, how can we be praying for that? And so a significant amount of our time is spent in praying for the congregation, which is, I mean, that's one of the biggest parts of a shepherding ministry. Individually, you know, as elders, we are to be praying for the flock together when we come together as a session to pray for them. So that's one of the major services. So, you know, I always want people to know that when our elders gather together. You know, I think sometimes it's easy for people, they think of a session meeting maybe in the same way that they think of, oh, that's just kind of like a committee meeting. You know, they're just going through their agenda, or they're setting the schedule, or blah, blah, blah. And yeah, there are menial tasks like that we have to do as elders to just make sure things are running. But it is a service of love, because we are meeting for the spiritual benefit, the spiritual growth of the congregation. And a lot of that, aside from the decisions that are being made, a lot of that is focused on our prayers for our people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing I'd add to that, and I appreciate what you said there, Kyle, that, you know, it's a meeting of prayer. A lot of people think of it like a board. And I don't know if either one of you have ever served on a board in the community, but it's not like a board meeting. It's not like a committee meeting. It is something wholly and completely different, in that it is bathed in prayer. The prayer is the focus of, if not maybe the majority of the time, but the majority of the concern is how to pray for people, how to care for people. So it, you know, I appreciate that. It is fundamentally different than you know, that I've served on many boards. It's fundamentally different than any of those boards.
I really appreciate that emphasis. And I think that's what it should be like. I don't think it's always that way, but I'm glad in your context it is. And it's certainly what we're seeking to practice as well. I would, you know, just say that we tend to focus a lot of, especially at the beginning of the meeting, and shepherding God's people in the manner that you're talking about and praying for them. There is also just the administrative details and the business details that you do have to take care of in a church. And so there is time that has to be devoted to managing things such as who's going to be on committees, or what outreach plan we're going to have, or what the budget's going to look like for this year, those kinds of things. So certainly those more matters of that type of nature are part of our concern in the session meeting, you know, quote, maybe less spiritual in one sense. So the church is run and administered carefully. A lot of times elders will report on different projects that are going on in the church. But I do appreciate what you're emphasizing. Really, the emphasis we want to have in this particular episode of the podcast is on the importance of shepherding during those meetings. Kyle, did you want to add something to that? Or?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, you're right. There are administrative things that need to be done. And in Presbyterianism, I hope that's not because as elders, we're just a bunch of micromanagers. I have better things to do with my life than needlessly micromanage everything. But within Presbyterianism, we do believe that the elders have the oversight of every aspect of the church. It's worship, it's fellowship, it's life. And so, you know, we need to be invested in that. You know, I was just having lunch today with some neighboring pastors, and it was very interesting to me. We got on the topic of who picks the music, who picks the songs for worship. And some of the pastors were expressing, you know, it's so frustrating. Like, I'm not allowed to pick the songs. And it's like, who picks the songs? And they're like, whoever happens to be gifted at music. And, you know, as a Presbyterian, you kind of sit back and you go, I forgot what life was like outside of my circles. But, you know, the elders do have oversight of everything. The elders have oversight of the congregation. The elders have oversight of the deacon board. Ultimately, we are the ones that are over them. And so the various committees, the various organizations, the various whatever, the session needs to know what's going on there, because we've been tasked with overseeing. And again, not in a micromanagement way. We love to see people utilize their gifts and talents and graces, but it's to be faithful and to know what's going on in the congregation. So, and I think, you know, the administrative stuff, I will readily admit it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite, but a well-ordered church is a grace to people in and of itself. A chaotic church neither reflects God, nor is it good for the membership. And so even there, when we're taking up these administrative things, it is for the smooth ordering of the church, which hopefully, Lord willing, is a benefit to the members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the elders are not doing it all. They're just trying to make sure everything is done in an orderly way, and hopefully appointing people to do some of that work. You know, and Kyle, in some of those contexts too, outside our denomination, it's not just who picks the songs, it's who writes the songs. I write the songs that make the whole world sing.
That make the old, that's right. There we go. Scott, did you get that cultural reference?
That's a cultural reference.
Very so hip. Very so hip.
Yeah. Back in the 70s.
Oh, man. Yeah, there are 60-year-olds just loving it right now.
Well, besides the session meeting, what would you say are other means that elders employ to shepherd? And I think this discussion that we're having is very important. And part of the reason I wanted us to talk about it is with all the concern regarding pastoral abuse and leadership abuse that goes on out there, I've heard some proponents trying to just throw away the whole idea of church leadership or male leadership and that type of thing. And I think it's really important for us. Yeah, we need to be protective in the church and address these matters of abuse and abusive leadership. We have to take care of that, but we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and act as if the church is not to be led by those who the Bible calls to be elders, to be presbyters in the church. And I think it behooves us then as as shepherds of God's people, that we are caring for them in right and appropriate ways. And beyond just having session meetings, what are other ways that we are to go about doing the work of shepherding God's flock?
Barry, I love that question, but I just to give our, if any of our listeners are unfamiliar with Presbyterianism, our session meetings are not only prayer and administration. One of the biggest benefits we believe as Presbyterians that sessions get to admit and dismiss from membership. And so there's a whole lot of shepherding that goes on there. Just last night, we had the huge privilege of interviewing a new couple for membership in our church. To hear their profession of faith, to hear their commitment to this congregation and to live out according to the grace of Jesus in a covenantal relationship with us. So we do things like that. Discipline, of course, is always going to originate with the session of an individual. And so those are some of the weightier, heavier matters, but it is equally a very significant thing that a session does, admitting to and dismissing from membership.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And let me just follow that up then. I imagine before this couple came before your session, there was some work that was done beforehand. So how did you bring them to that point? And I think you just talked, Scott, I don't know if it's tonight you're doing this, you're getting ready to admit some new members.
I think that's where we're headed. So yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know that it will be tonight, but it will be soon, I believe.
I went to the local bank and I withdrew $50 and I said, hey, if you add to our numbers, you get $50. So do you want to, that's how we prepare members for the church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so they met with us last night as a session, but some of the work that goes on beyond and outside of a session meeting, you know, we met with them a number of times. Now they were transferring in from a Bible believing Baptist church. So we weren't starting from square one with them. Some of the covenant youth that come in, you know, and they want to do membership, we put them through a prolonged class where we teach them what is it that this denomination believes and what are you committing to. This couple we met with over a period of weeks and a number of times and walk them through some of the very same things. And I always tell them when I do that, it's just, you know, we want you to know what you're getting yourself into. But as Presbyterians, we also believe nobody have a panic attack. But we believe in one sense, the church is a voluntary organization. We don't coerce people. They are willingly and voluntarily taking these responsibilities to themselves. It's one of the things that might distinguish us from a cult. And so you want people to be able to make informed decisions about that. Here's who we are. Here's what we believe. You know, Scott said earlier, session meetings aren't a secret society. And no, they're not. They're very public. But the whole ministry of the church is public. You know, we don't have these secrets that we keep. And you know, only when you come into the ranks, then do you get to find out the secret key to knowledge or whatever. And so you do these things publicly and you help people understand why we are, who we are, what is important to us, things like that. So there's classes, there's meetings for that. We do that as well by visitation. Either they'll come meet with us or I'll go to their house and then I'll walk them through those things. So that's one of the things that we do outside of a session meeting that then has pretty big ramifications for then the moment when they come and they interview with the session.
Mm-hmm. But I do think to get to your original question, which is ways to shepherd outside. And Kyle, I appreciated everything you said because he went back and he asked you a question. You didn't go off topic. He asked you a different question.
Thanks for qualifying that, other guy. Yes.
You're welcome. I'm glad I could, you know, be of assistance in some way, boosting your ego. Anyway, we often think of shepherding in terms of you know, formal settings, elder visits to the home, meetings, interviewing for membership, teaching membership classes and those kind of things. But that's only one aspect of the shepherding. And I think to be a good shepherd is to be a part of the lives of the congregation. And so it's those times where you're, you know, you have somebody over for a Sunday afternoon meal, or you go to a kid, one of the kids' basketball games or soccer games or football games, and you sit with the parents and you just chat, or sitting at a table at fellowship lunch. Those are the times that you can really shepherd and learn about the congregation and learn about the individual members and the struggles they're having and the needs they have. Because if and I hate to say that, but if they don't trust you, If they don't like you, they're not going to share their lives with you. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty is when the time of struggle comes, they will go to who they are comfortable with. People call who they're comfortable with to help them in a tragic situation, a desperate situation. And if we as elders are not there to make ourselves available to the congregation in the good times and in the easy times, they are not going to make themselves available to us, or they're not going to come to us in those difficult times. They will go to others, maybe to worldly friends. And so we have to invest in the lives of the congregation more than just at a session meeting and at Sunday school class and Bible study. We have to be out with them shoulder to shoulder, as it were, throughout the week, walking throughout life with them, so that when the times of trouble come, they turn to the church and not somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Mother Mary.
Yes.
That's my cultural reference, when times of trouble come. So, you know, but, and I think what Scott is saying, and this is so important when it comes to shepherding and the ministry of the eldership, we have to be very intentional. You know, these are not, that kind of a relationship is not one that is forged when you sit on your thumbs and you expect people to just come to you. You have to be intentional about putting yourself in their lives and staying connected with them. You know, and that can be done in very formal ways, like, you know, okay, we're going to have Sunday school class now, or we're going to have a communicant members class or something like that. But so much of it, at least in my experience in now coming up on 11 years in ministry, so much of it is even just informal. You know, the younger people in our church, I can stay connected with through text messages, and, you know, and just even just checking in with people, you know, how's it going today or something like that. Sometimes it's just, hey, you want to go grab a meal, you know, you want to grab breakfast. Let's go do that together. And I think, you know, when I think about shepherding, even in a lot of those informal situations, whether it's exchanging some text messages, whether it's grabbing a meal together, you know, I'm going to sound very millennial, and I don't mean to, but some of that is just to build organic connections. You know, even when you're sitting there, you know, in one sense, you don't always have to be on point and like, okay, so we're having breakfast. So tell me, what are you reading in the Bible and what is the Lord teaching you? Those are good. Those are great opportunities, but there is something just about investing in people's lives, in their lives, in the daily routines. You know, how are things going? Tell me how work is going. You know, you've got young kids, so tell me how many times a day you want to pull your hair out. And let's talk about that. You know, things like that, and just taking a genuine interest in their lives. You know, people don't want to be treated like projects. And an elder in his shepherding ministry needs to show up in the life and show a genuine, and I mean genuine. People will spot the hypocrisy. They will spot formalism in with the drop of a hat. It's a genuine interest in their lives, because these are people, yeah, you've been called to serve them, but you love them. You love them. And people need to see that. They need to know that. They need to know I'm loved by this person. Like Scott said, because then when the tragedies hit and the big moments come where you really need to be extremely intentionally focused, well, you've created the context for that. So there's countless ways that shepherding carries itself beyond a session meeting and beyond Sunday mornings and Sunday evenings to just be invested in lives.
I think you both have shown well the need to be involved in our people's lives as we seek to shepherd them. But you've also both raised the idea that there are times of trouble that come where God's people need help and counsel. And so talk a little bit about that in terms of how we're to shepherd. It can be hard and difficult for people who get into conflict or are struggling with a shameful sin to actually come and open up to the leadership of the church. They can feel unworthy. They feel their shame. They feel their guilt. So how do elders create an environment? I think you're talking about that here, to be available for counsel And how much is that a part of, would you say, of your ministry, both individually as well as session members, where people are coming to your session meetings or coming to your session asking for help or coming to you personally asking for help? Does that happen a lot, a little? And just comment some on that.
We don't often see people come to the whole session with issues. It has happened a couple times. A couple other times our session has summoned somebody because we know that there's some problems and we're summoning you. Like you don't really have a choice. We're gonna help you work through this because we all see it for what it is, and that's what a shepherd has to do sometimes. But you know, you do get a lot of individual opportunity, and you know, those things are very heavy. They're very weighty. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. And I think one of the first things that I try to remind myself of is the high privilege. You know, how many times as a pastor have I been in a situation where somebody says, you know, I'm going to tell you something that I've never really told anybody. Here's a sin that I'm struggling with. And you sit there and it's very humbling to just say, wow, you've never shared this with somebody and you've chosen to come share it with me. Like, you know, and Barry, like you said, with all the guilt, with all the shame, with all the embarrassment. And so it's not easy, but it's a humbling privilege to be invited. You know, I sometimes tell people this, truly, I mean it. It's a humbling privilege to be invited into the messes of people's lives. You know, not keeping you at an arm's distance or not trying to hoodwink you under the pretense of what a perfect and put together life they have. But for them to say, man, our marriage is a mess and we really need somebody to talk to. You know, my personal life is a mess. I'm struggling with these habits, with that habit, and I really need your help. And I think when you frame it and keep in mind what a privilege that is, it doesn't always make it much easier. It's not easy to contend with sin. It's not easy to straighten the crooked paths of relationships. It's exhausting, quite honestly, and it's wearing and it's draining, but it is a privilege. And I think it's important to approach those situations like that. It's also so important to communicate that to the members, to say, you know, thank you for confiding in me. Thank you for letting me come and be a part of this. They need to know that it's not an inconvenience because it's what Jesus did, right? Jesus threw himself into the masses. Jesus looked with pity on those who were like sheep without a shepherd. And, you know, God forbid that it should ever be said of members in our church that they're like sheep without a shepherd because their elders aren't being faithful to take pity and to be merciful toward them.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think it's so important that the congregation knows that we're not doing it under compulsion. You mentioned that, Kyle, but you know, it's somebody who wants to be there for somebody else. It's so meaningful. You know, when you can tell, and I think Kyle, you mentioned this sooner, people can see when your heart is there for them or when you're just going through the motions. And so that, I mean, that's something that I think elders really need to check their heart, pray about that to make sure that our hearts are in the right place whenever we do anything. So it's not under compulsion, but with joy that we get to do this. And that, you know, that joy comes from the Lord, and we need to, we have to be, I'm going to use a millennial word. We have to be authentic, you know, when it comes to dealing with the sheep,
organic, because
they can spot a fake. I know it's Kyle's rubbing off on me. I mean, next thing you know, I'll be whining all the time. Just like
talking about your journey.
It's a privilege, Scott. It's a privilege to rub off on you. Okay.
I'm sure you can get all the help you can get. Yeah. Well, thank you, Kyle.
Well, as we're coming to end here, there's something you're both touching upon that I thought would be appropriate for us to address. We've talked a little, you know, quite a bit about the method or the means of shepherding, but let's just talk a bit about the manner of shepherding. Kyle, you're referencing that we're to be emulating Christ and how we shepherd. He was a good shepherd. He's our great shepherd. He's our gentle shepherd. So talk a little bit about the manner about which elders who have been given this role as officers of the church, as shepherds of God's people, what's the manner by which they are to be conducting themselves in this office?
Well, I, you know, in one sense, to find a one size fits all can be very hard. This is where tremendous wisdom and discernment is needed. You know, you think of what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Thessalonians, you know, you need to admonish the idle, you need to strengthen the weak, you need to encourage the discouraged, and you need to be patient with every single one of them. You know, there's a pastoral sensitivity that needs to gauge where people are. You know, there are some people who are so idle and they need to be admonished. And you need to do that with, you know, the Apostle Paul doesn't hesitate to tell Timothy to do so with all authority. And yet, you know, if there's a bruised reed or a smoking flax, the last thing you're going to want to do is go sound the trumpet of admonishment in their ear, because you're going to do exactly what Christ doesn't do. Mm-hmm. You're going to break the bruised reed, and you're going to smother the smoldering flax. And so there is a tremendous amount of, and I think that's why Paul there says, you know, you've got to be patient. You've got to really assess the situation and know what is the appropriate manner with which to carry out your ministry in this moment. You know, and some guys, the loud, obnoxious human beings in today's world will, oh, you're just the tone police, you know, just give them the truth. You know, no, there is a pastoral tone. There is a pastoral manner in which you minister to people. And again, it's not a one size fits all, though. And it can be really hard. It can be really hard because you can ruin a ministry by unnecessarily wounding sheep. Or you can become too passive because you're too scared sometimes to carry on in the manner in which an individual might need it. So that's one thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that. And I think we've come to the end of this episode. We do think this whole subject's important and one we need to keep talking about as the church. It's so important for God's people to be shepherded carefully. We appreciate you tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. If you'd like to contact us and give us ideas for future topics, you can write us at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. Or if you just want to send fan mail, we'll accept that as well. You can go over to our website at 3gt.xyz and learn more about us. And we are very grateful for your support and for listening along with us. That's all for now, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time on 3GT.